Knowledge Products presents The Social Contract by Jean-Jacques Rousseau. The place was Paris. The date was the 20th of Prairio of the year 2 in the French Revolutionary calendar, or more conventionally, the 8th of June, 1794. Maximilien Robespierre, the current leader of the revolutionary government, master of the Reign of Terror, was inaugurating the new religion he had decreed, the cult of the Supreme Being. The lavish ceremony was conducted in the Tuileries garden on a day of remarkable loveliness. Robespierre delivered one of his lengthy orations in front of most of Paris. Then, solemnly, he set fire to the statues representing atheism, folly, and vice. The figure of wisdom emerged triumphant from the flames. Next, a long procession followed Robespierre to the Champ de Mars, where the Eiffel Tower stands today. There, the immense crowd swore allegiance to the Republic. It was Robespierre's proudest moment. Less than 2 months later, he would fall from power and be himself guillotined. In proposing this festival, Robespierre invoked the name of a philosopher who died some 15 years before, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, a name often on his lips. Even as a student, his head was full of Rousseau. Robespierre claimed to have met Rousseau.
Divine man, I saw you during your last days, and the memory remains a source of joy and pride. I contemplated your august features and saw on them the marks of the dark disappointment to which you were condemned by the injustice of mankind. I understood all the griefs of a noble mind devoted to the worship of truth.
Robespierre used Rousseau to great effect when he argued in front of the various revolutionary assemblies and clubs. To many, he was Rousseau's spiritual child. Can this be so? Is it possible that one of history's most notorious state terrorists was the legitimate heir of Rousseau, the sensitive recluse, the tender lover of nature, the impassioned tribune of virtue and justice? And how valid is the further claim that Rousseau was the progenitor of the totalitarian movements of the 20th century? In this presentation, we will examine these questions. We will begin by sketching the early life of Rousseau. Then we will discuss the works which initially brought him fame, as well as the reputation of being an enemy of the advanced civilization of his time. He was a critic of vice and hypocrisy to some. To others, a hawker of dangerous primitivism. Next, we will present the argument in Rousseau's most famous and influential political work, The Social Contract. Throughout, Rousseau's personal life will shed light on his thought. Rousseau's place of birth influenced the rest of his life. He was born in Geneva on June 28, 1712. Geneva was what it had been for centuries, an independent city-state and republic. One of Rousseau's ancestors had emigrated to Geneva from France in the middle of the 16th century. A Huguenot, or French Protestant, he was escaping the persecution of Protestants in his homeland. A few years before, the great reformer, John Calvin, had established his theocratic reign in that city. The state imposed penalties for transgressing a great array of rules concerning everyday personal life. Censors of morals as well as of publications were set up. Religious dissidents were severely punished. Rousseau's mother, Suzanne Bernard, came from a rather patrician background. Her father had often found himself in trouble with Geneva's supervisors of moral behavior, and Suzanne, reputed to have brains and beauty, had her run-ins with authority on account of girlish peccadilloes. Evidently, Rousseau never realized this, since his writings never questioned the justice of the Genevan system of moral policing. Rousseau's mother died a few days after his birth. He was raised by his father Isaac, who, although ambitious, finally settled for the trade of watchmaker. While by no means a bad father, he occasionally beat the young Rousseau, or else accused him of having caused his mother's death. Rousseau seemed to feel an irrational responsibility for this. When Rousseau was 10 years old, his father came into conflict with a patrician, and he fled Geneva, deserting his children. Rousseau went to the home of a pastor in a nearby village. Here, he was happy enough, but Rousseau recalled a soul-searing episode in his later work, Confessions. He was wrongly accused of breaking the teeth of a comb that did not belong to him. Although repeatedly beaten, he refused to admit to the crime. The incident had a lasting influence on him.
That first meeting with violence and injustice has remained so deeply engraved on my heart that any thought which recalls it summons back this first emotion. The feeling was only a personal one in its origins, but it has since assumed such a consistency and has become so divorced from personal interests that my blood boils at the sight or the tale of any injustice, whoever may be the sufferer, and wherever it may have taken place, in just the same way as if I were myself its victim. When I read of the cruelties of a fierce tyrant, of the subtle machinations of a rascally priest, I would gladly go and stab the wretch myself, even if it were to cost me my life 100 times over.
Rousseau was apprenticed to an engraver who did not treat him kindly. One Sunday, when he was 16, Rousseau returned late from an excursion in the country to find the gates of Geneva already closed. He decided not to go back to his master. Instead, he crossed the border to a town in the Catholic territory of the King of Sardinia. There, he soon met a cultivated and warm-hearted lady named Madame de Warenne. This was the most important friendship of his life. As an old man, he recalled the meeting.
"Today, Palm Sunday, is exactly 50 years since I first met Madame de Warenne. She was 28 then, having been born with the century. I was not yet 17, and all unknown to me, the approach of manhood was making my naturally fervent heart burn with a new ardor. If it was not surprising that she should be kindly disposed toward a lively yet gentle and modest young man of quite pleasing appearance, it was even less surprising that a charming, intelligent, and graceful woman should make me feel not only gratitude, but more tender feelings which I was unable to distinguish from it. But what is more unusual is this, that this first impulse determined my whole life and led inexorably to the fate that has governed the rest of my days."
Rousseau called Madame de Warenne Mama, and she called him Little One, the first of his many aristocratic patrons, and the first of the ladies with whom he entered into complex emotional relationships. She became Rousseau's lover. He remained with Madame de Warenne on and off for about 10 years. He read, explored music, and wandered through the countryside. These aimless wanderings made him feel free.
"Never did I think so much, exist so much, be myself, as in the journeys that I have made alone and on foot. Walking has something about it which animates and enlivens my ideas. I can hardly think while I am still. My body must be in motion to move my mind. The sight of the country, the succession of agreeable views, open air, good appetite, the freedom of the alehouse, the absence of everything that could make me feel dependence or recall me to my situation, all this sets my soul free, gives me a greater boldness of thought. I dispose of nature as its sovereign lord."